We're holding Igeret Rav Shiri Agon, and we were discussing Rebbe's compilation of the Mishnah. We had discussed the special bond between Antoninus and Rebbe. I think I mentioned that I couldn't find the source for the story of the switch between Antoninus and Rebbe. Well, since then I found the source. It's a medrash quoted by Tosfos in Avodah Zarah. The medrash says, Chalav metaher, chalav metame. That a mother's milk can purify and a mother's milk can make defiled. Halachically, one could give their child to nurse from a non-Jewish woman. It's not good for him. It might affect him spiritually. It might affect the way he grows. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't drink from a non-Jewish woman. A non-Jewish woman eats non-kosher food, and that affects her milk, and that'll ultimately get to the baby. So Tosfos quotes the following story, that Rebbe's parents circumcised him when he was 8 days old, and the Roman Empire had decreed that no child may be circumcised, and they had heard that Rebbe's mother had circumcised him, so they called Rebbe's mother before the emperor together with her baby. And when Rebbe's mother was on the way, so she met up with Antoninus' mother, and they switched the babies. And she took Antoninus and came before the emperor, and they took off the baby's diaper, and they saw that he wasn't circumcised. Well, lo and behold, he's the son of, he's Antoninus, he's not really Rebbe, but they couldn't tell the difference. So there was a man standing there, and he said to the emperor, I tell you, I was there at his circumcision. I know they circumcised that baby, but their God loves them, so he makes weird things, so that's why the baby seems uncircumcised now. Now, when the Romans heard this, they said, okay, so we're abolishing the decree against circumcision. So, and then on our way back, they switched back. So Antoninus nursed from Rebbe's mother for that period when she had taken him. And that affected him. Later on in his life, he circumcised himself, and he went to learn by Rebbe, and he became Jewish. Now, Antoninus was the Roman emperor. And I saw that some want to say that at the time that Rebbe was being taken as a baby, before the emperor, it was Antoninus' father who had decreed that no Jew may be circumcised. And it was Antoninus' mother, the wife of the emperor, who said, I'm not going to let that baby get killed. And she conned her husband and went to Rebbe's mother and said, let's switch babies. And she switched babies, and then they showed the emperor his own child. But at 10 days old, he couldn't really tell the difference between his own baby and Rebbe. You'd be surprised. Babies are that small, it's hard to tell. And then they switched back. So that's what some want to say. But at any rate, so the source for this story, Tosfos quotes the Medrash, Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, the Tefillin and this. So Rebbe compiled the Mishnah, and we had seen that Rebbe had the Mishnah written. And now Rav Shrir Agon is quoting to us the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which quotes the Tosefta, which explains to us how the halachic process had evolved and what was the ordinary halachic process until the period of Shammai and Hillel's disciples. And that's where we were holding. So let's see the Gemara in Sanhedrin. We're holding Sanhedrin Daf Pei Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara says as follows. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi tells us, Mitchila lo yu marbi machloket b'Yisrael. Initially, there weren't many arguments in Israel. El Betin Sheshvim v'chad Yishvim Lishkat HaGazit. We had the high court of 71 members sitting in the special room in the on the temple, by the temple, called Lishkat HaGazit, the room of finely cut stone. V'shnei batei nidnim she'esrim shlosha, and you had two other high courts consisting of 23 members, 23 judges. Echad yoshev al petach ha'arbayit, one was at the entrance to the harabais. V'echad yoshev al petach ha'azarah, and one was convened at the entrance to the Azara. V'shal b'tei dinin shel 23 yoshvim b'chol erechot Yisrael. And there were other high courts. In each city you had a high court consisting of 23 members. If a question arose, so the people who had a question would ask their court, the court of their city. And if the court knew the answer, they tell them, and if not, if they didn't know the answer, they'd go to the court next door, the city next to theirs. Im shamu, so if that court knew the answer, if they had a tradition what the answer to this question was, amulem, they tell them, v'im lav, and if they too didn't know, v'in lezesh al pitach harabait, then they'd go together to the high court that was at the entrance to Harabais, the entrance to the mountain.
That's the Sanhedrin, right?
That's not the Sanhedrin.
The Sanhedrin.
That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Im shamu, if that court had heard the answer, amulem, then they'd tell them what the answer was. And if they too didn't know, then they'd all go to the court that was at the entrance to the Azara. Now we're already entering the temple. And the man who had an issue would say, I learned like this, that the halacha should be like this, this is my proof. And my friends disagree with me, they want to say differently, and this is their source for it. This is the tradition I have. This is what I learned from my rabbi. And my friends have a different tradition. If that court had a tradition, then they tell them what their tradition was. And if that court, we're talking about the second highest court in the country, in the people of Israel, so if they too didn't know, then everyone together would come to the special room where we have the highest court, the Sanhedrin city. Shesham Yoshvin mitamid sheshachar atamid sheben arbaim. That over there the high court would convene from the sacrifice of the morning, the tamid sheshachar, till the evening sacrifice. Uvshabbatot v'yamin tovim yoshvin b'chel, and on Shabbos and Yom Tov they'd sit outside. There was a special wall, small wall, this high, small wall surrounding the temple, the Beis Hamikdash, and in between that wall and the temple was called the chel. So that area is where the court would sit on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Nishara she'la bifneihem, the question was asked before them. Im shamhu amhu lehem, if they heard, if they had a tradition, they tell them the answer they had on tradition. V'im lav, and if they did not have a tradition, omdin leminyan, so they could come to count. They would say, if we don't have a clear tradition on this question, so I'll take a vote. And rabuam tamim timu, if the majority were those that said that the answer to this question is that in this scenario it should be tameh, defiled, so then that's how their ruling would be. Rabuam tarin, if the majority opinion was that it should be pure, tiaru, then they'd rule that it's pure. Mishrabu talmidei shamai v'ilel shloshim shu kol tzokan, when they hit a generation that there were many disciples of Shammai and Hillel that did not serve by their rabbis, they did not learn as much as they should have. Rabu machloket b'Yisrael, there began flourishing arguments within Israel. V'nasi Torah kishtei Torot, and the Torah became divided as though there were two Toros. Misham kotvim v'sholchin b'chol mekomot, etc. Kol mishu chacham v'shafed u'shfal berech v'dat abriot nochai imenu yeh dayan b'irom. Misham alin tola arbaim, misham nazam, misham nishkat agzit, shachum mitam, ezeu ben lamba, anavtan shfar berech, etc. So this is the source until here, that the Torah became like two Toros during the period of the disciples of Shammai and Hillel. And we had seen that Rav Shira Gaon earlier explained to us that the reason was that there were invasions during this period. The land of Israel was under constant attack. We were under Roman rule. We were under the rule of the Hasmonean kings. And this period was a period where there were constant decrees against learning Torah. The rabbis couldn't learn by their teachers the way previous generations had. The academies were being shut down. The rabbis were being chased and persecuted. So the Rav Shira Gaon had attributed this historical phenomenon of the disciples of Shammai and Hillel, where the arguments flourished within Israel, to sociological events, to political events, to the fact that they couldn't learn the way their predecessors had. So that is the background that ultimately led to rabbis being forced to write down the oral law, because we reached a point where things were being forgotten. The students couldn't study as earlier generations had. Chachamim, Chalkach, the sages after this, Shabimei Rabban Gamliel, Rav Shimon Beno, In the days of Rabbi Gamliel and his son Rabbi Shimon, you adayin osim notnin ba'alacha, you machlok ten tanaim, lo efshar shekulayim yimedu pe'echad. There were arguments, and the next generation saw that the arguments were such that they couldn't reach a final bottom line, they couldn't reach a conclusion. ובימי רבי עזרו להם מן השמיים שנמו דברי המשנה כמפי הגבורה והם כאות ומופת. And Rebbe had special divine assistance that they were able to reach a bottom line. They were able to compile a Mishnah. This was unusual that in Rebbe's time they would be able to compile a Mishnah because there were differing opinions and differing traditions that had evolved in the 100 years leading up to Rebbe. And so Rebbe worked very hard putting the rabbis together. He took advantage of this historical window in which they had peace because of the friendship between Rebbe and Antoninus. And together with help from heaven, they were able to get everyone together and compile one version of the Mishnah. In Tveria, no? No? We'll see. I don't remember. We'll see. We'll see. We shall see. Do we have time to continue?
We don't usually.
Okay, so continue a few more minutes. And Rebbe didn't really invent anything of his own. Just as we saw last time that Rebbe quoted the Mishnah that Ben Zakkai once asked the witnesses about the figs that were growing on the tree, if they could attest to what kind of figs were growing, and the Gemara asked, why are we calling him Ben Zakkai? And the Gemara had said that that was his nickname. Really his name is Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai, but he had said this thought, let's check the witnesses, let's ask them this question and see if they contradict one another, and through this we'll be able to disqualify their testimony and we won't have to put this person to death. They're testifying that he legally must be put to death. And he was proven right. When they asked the witnesses, the witnesses erred, they contradicted one another. So the Mishnah was quoted in his name, but he wasn't yet a rabbi. So the tradition was that in this Mishnah we read, Ben Zakkai says such and such. And the reason is because he was Ben Zakkai. He was the one who caused the schuz. Zakkai means to be meritorious. This person walked out of court meritorious. He walked out scot-free. He wasn't put to death. And that's why the Mishnah quotes it in the name of the son of Zakkai, because he wasn't yet a rabbi. Nonetheless, for generations they had this exact quote of the Mishnah. Even though we have many other Mishnahs in which they quote Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, this Mishnah, they had the tradition so clearly that they knew to quote this Mishnah as Ben Zakkai, the son of Zakkai says this. You guys with me? You remember? We did this last time we were together. Mm-hmm. And another proof to this, that the tradition that Rebbe got was very accurate, Miditnan, from the fact that the Mishnah asks, how do we expand the cities? When we make an Erev to a city, how do we know how far to go? And the Gemara records that Rebbe verified, do we pronounce it with an Ayin or an Aleph? Is it Me'abrin or Me'abrin? And the Gemara says, the Gemara explains why each one has validity, either way will end up with the same understanding. But he wanted to get it down pat to know, is it me'abrin or me'abrin, with an aleph or an ayin? Well, it depends if it's with an aleph or an ayin. If it's with an ayin, so it's like a pregnant woman. And what? Like ibur. No, in Hebrew. No. And if it's me'abrin with an aleph, then it's like aver, like a limb. Like you add a limb to a body, so it's like this limb, this extension. How do we figure out how far the extension to the city goes? The Gemara says that Rebbe tried to verify when we say the Mishnah, is it Akudo with an aleph or akudo with an ayin? And both are valid, but we see that Rebbe himself verified what the ancient tradition was, how how even down to these fine letters, Rebbe verified what the tradition was, how the Mishnah should be read. And in Rebbe's time, the Mishnah was already broken down to tractates. From the story that we had already seen, that Rabbi Meir said to Rabbi Natan, they had said, if you remember the story, they were upset at the Nasi, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, for his decree about how all the students rise, that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel had tried to give extra strength, halachic strength, to the Nasius, to the princehood, and they felt that halachically he wasn't entitled to that strength, and they were going to prove that point by asking Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, teach us the tractate Uktzin, that last small tractate in the end of Shas, which they knew that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel didn't have down pat. And then they'd show him, you see, you don't know all of the Shas the way you should, so you shouldn't be the prince, you shouldn't lead us. So we see they were discussing tractates. In that time, a few generations before Rebbe already, in the generation of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, they already have they already had the Mishnah broken down to tractates.
This is before the Rebbe wrote them down?
This is before Rebbe wrote them down, correct. And we also have the continuation of the story. Umaisa Rav Yaakov ben Karshai, Dazi Yatev Lade Kuta Deilite, Daviatev Manshim Gamliel Gas Vetana Gas Vetana Uktina, Mamai Dikama Yavdate Gamra. And the story continues that Rabbi Yaakov ben Karshai said, why should I let Rav Shimon ben Gamliel get embarrassed? So he sat by Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's window that night, and he started reviewing these three chapters of Uktzin again and again and again. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel hears that someone's humming out his window. He can't sleep at night, so he hears, and then he learns it by heart. Ve'ika duchata deosif behai Rebbe perushe. And there are places that Rebbe added his explanation within the Mishnah. Kigon haditnan, like the Mishnah that describes, abanim yotzim b'ksharim, sons can walk out with their knots. The Gemara says that if a child can't let go of his father, he misses his father very much. So there's a segula, some way of getting the kid to stop missing his father. You take a shoelace from the father, I don't remember if it's from the left shoe of the father, and you tie it on the kid's right hand, or vice versa. The Gemara says you have to get it right, because if you get it wrong, then it'll make the kid miss his father even more. So the Gemara says there was one way that if they take one of the shoelaces from the father and put it on one of the hands of the kid, if you got it right, then that would get the kid to calm down. He wouldn't miss his father anymore. And the Mishnah says, "Uvnei lachim yotzim bezugim," and princes, they may go out with their bells. So that's all the Mishnah used to say, the original version of the Mishnah. Hachi avi mitanya mipumad rishonim. This was the original version of the Mishnah. Piresh b'Rebbe v'tana, and Rebbe added an explanation. Rebbe added the following words to the Mishnah. V'chol adam, really everyone could go out this way. Ela shedibur chachmim ba'oveh. But the rabbis, when they said, this is how a child may go out, and this is how a prince may go out, they were speaking about what's common. Who ordinarily goes out with bells? The average person doesn't wear a bell. A prince does. But it doesn't mean to the exclusion of everyone else. Aside from the Mishnayos, which were actually compiled in Rebbe's days and the days following him, just as we find that the Mishnah itself sometimes says this was an earlier version of the Mishnah, this was a later version of the Mishnah, the Mishnayos in Nazir. You have a Mishnah that says this is the halacha, and the ancient Mishnah has it this way. But we've decided differently. So you see, the Mishnah itself says there was a Mishnah Rishonah, there was an earlier Mishnah, and a later Mishnah. Ukigon Masechta Deidiyot, and for example, we have the whole tractate Deidiyot, Ditnia Bioma Dukmol Rav Elezer ben Azariah, that was said over in the day that Rav Elezer ben Azariah was established. Tamrinan Bovayom Nishnu Kol Bovayom Vaf Ediyot Bovayom Nishnit. So we're going to begin with this, the tractate Eduyot, and the day that Eduyot was said over, that's what we're going to begin with, Bezrat Hashem, next week, that Gemara in Brachos.
Is it tractate of witnesses?
Of testimonies. Eduyot is a tractate of testimonies.